everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we've got a real talk with a real leader here today. Before we get started, I'm going to give a shout out and thank you to our founding partners, CMD Agency, Felicia Hall Allen and Associates, and 6to8 Digital. So folks, I could not be more excited for today's guest. If you have followed me on any platform, if you've listened to this show before, you have heard me rave about my coach, Leslie Harris, who is kind enough to join us today. So Leslie, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
It's my pleasure to be here. You know, I don't have a big public presence, but when you asked me enough times, so I had to say yes. And before we start, I have to thank you because I owe you an enormous debt of gratitude because, as you know, we've worked together for a long time, but very early in my training, you were willing to sort of work with me and help me learn a lot about coaching. And along the way, I became a better coach, and you were a terrific client the entire time. So thank you. You were really part of the very early start of all this for me. So thank you. I don't know if you remember, but you were there.
Do I remember? Are you kidding me? Because I have felt so grateful every step of the way. And the day that you asked me if I wanted to be part of your, early coaching experience, I was like, who, me? I was thinking about this earlier. I literally wouldn't be where I am today in so many respects if we had not been working together over the course of something like 8 years. And so
thank you so much. That's the best part of doing this. That's very meaningful to me. I don't take it for granted at all.
Oh my goodness. And I don't take it for granted our conversations every other Wednesday.
Every other Wednesday, 2 p.m. EST.
So folks, if you're ever hunting me down at Wednesday,
it says repeats forever.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Oh, and there's Petey, folks. Leslie knows Petey as well. We'll actually talk about that at some point in this conversation. And folks, it's funny, Leslie mentioned he's not very public with his presence. And so I have to tell you, I have been asking him for a long time. Since I started this, I've been asking Leslie to come on. He's like, no. And so this morning, my husband's like, no way, Leslie's coming on. He finally said yes. So thank you so much for coming on. And so we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, folks. And I should also mention, so how I know Leslie, so because I always give you all context for how I know my guest. So Leslie's wife, Pam Harris, is one of my best friends. The two of them now are literally family to me. I've known Pam for, oh my goodness, 15 plus years. We met in the New York City marketplace, both worked in sports and entertainment. And one day we showed up at the same yoga studio practicing next to each other. So
she's the real star in this relationship,
She did. She did. So shout out to Pam, and thank you so much, Pam, to you also for being such a big part of my journey and my evolution. So folks, I'm with my guests, I like to give you context for their journey and their evolution. And I love Leslie's story. So I am going to turn it over to you, Leslie, and ask you to tell people your story from how you got from there, wherever there was, to here.
There's a very short version and there's a very long version.
Medium.
Back into it. At one point, I was doing some training, and a woman who is a very dear friend of mine at this juncture. We had just met. Her name's Vivian. She said, "If you don't pursue this, you're wasting your life." And that was very meaningful to me. It still is when I think about it today. But to back up to that conversation, I had a very long career in the financial markets. Very long career, pretty good one. And I was sort of at the tail end of that. And I was no longer managing money for anybody else other than myself and my family. And I was living downtown in Tribeca, and the markets weren't that interesting. And as Shauna, food's one of my big passions. And something I'm very devoted to. And there was a little restaurant opening up not too far from me. And I basically walked in there one day and said, listen, I don't know what you're doing here, but I've been getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning for the last 30 years. I'm very good around the kitchen, very in tune with customer service. If you need someone to be here early in the morning, I live across the street. And they said, okay. So I started working in there, and I was the morning guy. Go get in at 6. I'd bake the bread, make the pastry, something I'm pretty capable of doing. And then from 7 to 11, I was the barista, serving sandwiches, making coffee, and then and pastries. And it was my place, 7 to 11, my music, whole vibe. And it was a lovely place. And then I'd work through lunch a little bit and leave early in the early afternoon. But what happened in the mornings is folks from the financial markets found out I was there. And they would stop in and they wanted to talk, you know, failed hedge fund manager, something very timely right now, compliance officer. There were some lawyers and who'd come in and we started chatting, and they, you know, benefited from the conversation. And then one day I look up and there's like a half a dozen people waiting to talk to me with their Bloombergs open, with their laptops open. And it was a little bit of this sort of Lucy and the psychiatrist is in 5 cents to talk to Leslie. And I took notice of that, that there was something there happening. And I tried to figure out how to pursue that further. And I considered getting an MSW in social work. It didn't really fit. And then someone said, you should try coaching. And I did some research and I found this very comprehensive coaching program called Coaches Training Institute. And I studied with them and I got certified with them. And then I got 5 clients and you were one of them. And the rest is sort of just a bunch of conversations over a long period of time.
I love that. I love that so much because I think there's an element of it where you were listening to your intuition. You were following what was meaningful to you. And what you said at the beginning was that it was related to what was put in front of you as purpose. And yeah. So I think that it's awesome to hear the example of it because, you know, I think people talk about it and, oh, you should be find your purpose and those kind of things. But it's also, I think people think you're going to find your purpose at a specific time in your life. So I love the fact that you're sharing this story that it happened, you know, at the tail end of a very successful career.
The interesting thing about that people in my former professional life are not surprised by this at all. Like I have a friend who I've known, let's just say for a long time, professionally and personally now. And when I told her I was doing this, she goes, what took you so long? Like, this is where you're supposed to be doing your whole life. So, and again, even people, colleagues of mine who I've worked with, you know, are not surprised at all by this. So yeah. That's sort of telling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you had mentioned social work. And so it was actually something I wanted to talk about, not social work, but I think a lot of times people think that coaching is a version of a therapist and or that you're going to get advice from your coach. And something that you and I established early on was our conversations is not therapy. It's not, you always say, I'm not in the advice giving business, which I've borrowed that many times and used because it's very true. But if you can give people a bit of a perspective about how you think about coaching, your approach to coaching, because I think it is helpful for people to have that perspective because I think there's so many perceptions or misperceptions about it. So can you share a bit of that?
Absolutely. First thing, you know, I'm a very big believer in therapy. Therapy is fantastic. A lot of my clients are in therapy. I have clients who are in couples therapy, they're in regular therapy, you know, like big supporter. But this is not that. And, you know, a very easy distinction to make is like therapy is a lot about examining the past and digging in and looking for patterns of behavior and trying to have a better understanding of your life. And that may be the wrong answer if you talk to a therapist, but for the purpose of this conversation, let's go with that. Yeah. And where I'm at is like I try to meet the client where they're at now, and I'm only interested in the forward. I do a little bit of background so I know how they got here. You know, I do a little bit of what's called the discovery session, where I talk to people about their life. But after that, it's really where you are today and how do you move forward? Like a great example, I had a client, he was a salesperson, and he was giving me all these excuses. So I said, Willie, I don't care why you don't want to do this, but in the next 2 weeks, the expectation is you're going to do these three things, and why you don't want to do it is really not relevant. So, you know, the thing about coaching is, you know, the other example I like to talk about, like 50 years ago, the only people who had coaches were actors and athletes. And it was all about how they could perform better on whatever stage they were. And coaching is this, you know, on a personal level, it's like, how does a person perform better in their lives, whether it's in their personal life or in their professional life, and how, you know, and that's what it's about today. So that's sort of like a little umbrella about coaching. Now, how I operate is, you know, I'm speaking for myself, not for the International Coaches Federation. I just try to have meaningful conversations with people, and you know, the relationships develop very organically. Each one is very unique into itself, and I like to say, there's no 12 steps to transformation. You know, you're not going to talk to me for, you know, 12 sessions and all of a sudden be a differently realized person. You might, but you know, I would never promise that. So what I try to do is just have these, what I like to call conversations of consequence with people, and I ask them a lot of questions and we take it from there. And as I always say, I'm not in the advice giving business, because the purpose of the coaching relationship is to help the client discover what's important for them on their own with some guidance.
Yeah. I love the way you talk about that. And by the way, I wrote that down, conversations of consequence. I love that phrase. And so folks, if you're listening, mark my words, you'll hear it and see it in things I do going forward. No, but I'm so glad that you shared it like that, because a couple of things from my own experience with you is that because of your approach, I've never felt judged. I've never felt like, there's been times where I didn't necessarily, I was worried about coming to the call in the very beginning, because I was worried that you would have an expectation that I had done X, Y, or Z between the calls. And it's exactly what you said, is you would meet me where you still do, you meet me where I am on every single call. And something that you've shared, and you can give a little bit more about this, but it's like, either do it or do the work or not, either way, you're going to learn something. And I think that's also something for people who are listening. You know, sometimes we can beat ourselves up. Do we do this? Do we do that? Not do this between calls, if it's a homework assignment, if it's a works, you know, something related to our journey, whatever. But it is actually pretty fascinating. Sometimes we do get in our own way. And I think there's something interesting about examining why.
Well, I love what you brought up about no judgment, because I think that is the most important quality. If you're anybody out there working with a coach or looking for coaches, they should have two qualities. They should be good listeners, and there should be no judgment. That's it. Like, I have a very diverse bunch of clients, different personalities, different, you know, professions, but, you know, no judgment in the call, and which has been wonderful for me, because, you know, I was and still am a very judgmental person, but that does not happen in the call. Like, there's none of that for me in the call. And it makes people feel both seen and safe, you know, and, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, where you can create an environment where someone can really be as vulnerable or as open as they need to be in that time. Yeah. And, you know, and when you do that, some real discovery happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I'm just talking like some personal experience with our relationship, is that while we don't dip back and do the psychoanalysis, there are times when we talk about, and I'll usually lead with this, I have to say, like, you've never like pried on this, but if I have a certain feeling, or if I am reacting in a certain way, or feel that I'm going to be reacting, we'll talk about why or where is it coming from. And so I think that that can be an element of understanding Like, because how we act right now or how we react to things a lot of times is because it's triggering something that sure. you experienced for the past or something like that. And sometimes it's good to know where it's coming from, but it's really only to your point to fuel where you're going. And I think right. that's been such a key in the way we work together, is because it's always, how do you move the ball forward, or to borrow another right. one of your phrases. Yeah. Or how do you shift perspective. Perspective. You've talked yeah. about, like, how do you shift perspective 12 degrees?
Yeah. Yeah. And the other, you know, the what I like to think about in the example you just gave is that, you know, if you feel triggered or you're noticing that, you don't have to take the bait. You know, you just have to know that that's happening and figure out how to, you know, I don't like this word, but how do you pivot away from what you've been sort of your behavior up until that point, and how do you change it? And just because it's caused you pain or conflict or whatever, you have a choice in that moment or in the next time it happens to react differently. And, you know, it may work, it may not work, but that's what you want to shine the light on. And again, to your point, is that you will bring up that experience. It's not me connecting the dots on your behalf.
Right, right. Absolutely. So this actually is making me think about something else that you and I have talked about and quite often, is kind of, how do you find that moment between something that is like a situation and how you act or how you react? And so we've talked a lot about that and the beauty of that often being found through meditation. And I know that's yeah. a big practice that is a part of your journey. It's been a practice yeah. that is a part of my journey, which I've recently gotten back on because I want to be more committed to it on a daily basis. But, you know, again, for the audience, I think, because sometimes it's like, we can hear these things, but it's like, yeah, but how do I actually make that happen in my life? And so can you talk about meditation, the role of meditation, again, through that lens of, how do you use it to have a positive impact on your
life? I'll try. I'm very private about talking about meditation because I don't want to sound like I'm telling people what to do, or, you know, like meditation, like most things, like coaching, you come to it when you're ready. I have at this juncture, a pretty good practice, but like I said, I talked about it for 5 years before I started doing it. Like, you know, it was my New Year's resolution for 5 years. I never did it, and then I started doing it. So I don't want to sound preachy, but I will say it's a very good thing to do because it helps you sort of slow down the world that you live in. And if you can do that sometimes, even just for a second, you don't take the bait and you don't take the trigger and you don't, you know, have that confrontation, whether it's on the checkout aisle in the supermarket or at the bank or with your loved ones or with your whatever. It's like, you know, it just sort of, you can slow the world down a little bit. Again, you don't have to take the bait every time it's presented to you. So that's, you know, so I'll just, again, without sounding preacher, I would say, if you're thinking about meditation, start doing it, see how it feels. You don't have to do 20 minutes a day. If you do it 2 minutes a day to start, that's perfectly fine. And if you get one good breath, that's a success. That's all I'll say about it.
Yeah. Well, actually, to that point, I love that. And those are something that you had shared with me when I first started practicing meditation more intently. You had shared that with me, like, again, one breath is like good enough, you know? And so again, it's like that concept of no judgment to yeah. like, no judgment to your own meditation practice. And to your point, yeah. I think, you know, people who tune into this show, like, and or in any take any of the information that I share across my platform, it really is, to your point, it's not about giving advice, it's about giving options for people's right. evolution. It's just about resources. And so I think, you know, for those who are listening, this is not to steer you in any direction per se. This is to offer up options and resources to help you know, that process of evolving.
The thing we've taught, like the language you and I talk about a lot, is one of my favorite words. I have a bunch that come up all the time, is optionality. And I like to think that in coaching, what an effective coaching relationship is one where the client creates optionality for themselves. And what we as humans, whatever, the thing that I find that's most prevalent across a lot of my clients when they start is that everything's binary. It's like, do I quit or do I stay? You know, do I fire this person or do I tolerate this person? And more often than not, there's a third, a fourth, a fifth, or sixth approach to this. And there's like also multiple ways to experience whatever you're going through. People have to like, I gotta be angry, I gotta be stoic. No, you can say this is a tough situation and like, what do I need to do to make it better? You know, it's not all about the suffering. It's all about, you know, maybe it's about handling it differently. So what we like, you and I use the word optionality a lot. And I think it's one that if anyone's listening to this, then one takeaway is that there are a lot of different runways and it's not, don't be trapped on the one that you think you're on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing that back up. And speaking of that, I want to segue a little bit to the job search, because I think, you know, there's so many people who are listening to this that at some point in their career are searching, whether you're currently employed or not, whether you have been, you know, laid off in a surprise form like I was, and you were so helpful to me through that process. But I think there's some perceptions and things that happen along that job search trajectory, related to resume writing, related to recruiters, and, you know, ways that we actually end up getting in our own way. So, I'd love for you to share a bit about, you know, if you're working with someone who is in a job search, like, what's your approach in those moments?
Really, you know, most simply is to keep them in motion. Is that what people are sort of sometimes in between jobs or laid off or looking for some or unhappy where they are, you know, they tend to get, to your language, in their own way. My language is they get stuck. And, you know, they, you know, think about the resume, it's like, okay, I'm gonna spend 4 hours working on my resume and I think that's looking for a job. No, that's really not. You're just, you know, hiding out from actually the tough part, which is calling people and emailing people and all the stuff that you're resisting. And what I try to do when I'm in that situation is get really people to focus on, you know, you and I joke around, like make a list of 10 people that you know that you have to get in touch with. And, you know, a email is only an invitation to a phone call, and a phone call is only an invitation to a coffee. It's just like, get yourself in front of them, do the networking, you know, your first time it's going to feel uncomfortable making that call, second time a little bit better, by the fifth time you're sort of getting your reps in, you're just sort of using that networking muscle, and you're just going to be better at it. So don't be discouraged by your own initial resistance, because that'll change. And just put yourself out there. And don't, you know, when I say this a lot too, it's like when you put yourself out there in the world, you think about the people to call, it's like be expected to be surprised by two ways. One is that people who you think you have these great relationships with and long histories, and you may have gotten them the job that they're in, they be very, might not give you the time of day. And other people who you think you have very casual relationships with, you hardly know, you haven't spoken to them in 5 years, will be super generous with their time and with their resources and their network. So I really tell people when they're looking, don't make any assumptions about anybody. Just move forward and reach out. And you don't necessarily have to know what you want to do, but you need to, like, you don't have to be super focused as you think, because once you go out there, people will think about you for other things. You know, and I always say it's not the people in your network, it's who they know. And I tell the story, and if I'm using the word networking too much, I apologize, but it's the most powerful tool you have, is that there's this notion that you get the call out of the blue and all of a sudden you got a job. That's BS. You got the call because you called 10 people and that person got a call and they said, hey, I know someone perfect for this job. It's Shauna Griffiths, you know, but you, because you reached out to them. So it's that circle that goes beyond your initial circle is where all the magic happens. And I just think that people have to get out of their own way. And it's uncomfortable. No one likes to do that. And no one likes to feel like they're out of a job and they're going hat in hand to people. But that's just, you know, get over it and go do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an element of that that you actually, that we've talked about as well, is be intentional in those conversations.
Yes.
Because I think another version of, like, you know, hiding out, working on your resume forever is getting on a phone call with someone and just shooting the shit, or like, hey, or, you know, kind of mentioning you might be looking for something. But I think the intentionality is really important, and it's something that you've stressed to me over time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, don't, you know, and I say this not only about someone in the job search, I say this about people who, you know, before they go into for their, you know, annual reviews, you know, ask for what you need, you know. People aren't mind readers. They don't know what's going on. So either be intentional or ask for what you need and, you know, be clear, or as we like to say, be clinical, you know, my other favorite word. We're hitting the top 10 here today.
Yeah, absolutely. I swear I have my favorite Leslie quotes that I hold near and dear. Now, I mean, I think like all of this is, I think, so helpful. And part of it also for folks who are listening is these, part of why we talk about these things and we have these phrases or these words is because, again, it's one of those things when we find ourselves in moments of insecurity, frustration, whatever. I think that those are things that I consider in my toolbox. They're resources. And a word can be a resource.
Yeah, sure.
A phrase can be a resource because it's that thing that you can gravitate toward. You can pull out to catch yourself in the moment and pause and decide how you actually want to operate in that moment. It's that awareness, I think, that is so helpful to that journey forward.
Yeah, or it could just be like, you know, to back towards the actor or athlete metaphor, it's like it's a cue. It's like it's a cue. It's like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do now. This is like, and if you feel sort of a little rudderless, this sort of centers you, like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think it's so common that we often tell ourselves stories in moments, interpreting what, to your point about like, ask for what you need, people aren't mind readers, those kind of things, and these things that we're actually pulling on our memory to help us in the moment. Again, I think like the mind and the stories that we tell ourselves can be so powerful. And so, you know, another thing that we often talk about is that, you know, that we often fall into this trap of thinking that other people are thinking about us more than they are, and right, that somebody else's, the way they're acting, not leading, has anything whatsoever to do with us. And that's often not the case.
Correct.
So, you know, again, I think like these are key instances in which we can catch ourselves and go, oh, wait a second, that's a story I'm telling myself. I could actually choose a different direction. Correct. In this moment, which you said earlier about like, so much is choice in this.
Right. Well, you know, you get to change. I mean, if it's a story, you get to change the narrative. You know, that's your privilege. That's your power. You know, change the story. So yeah. I know it's not that simple because I know we're all like have our buttons and have our wheels and our mechanisms in there, but that doesn't mean that you're destined for that forever. You know, that might have been the story up until this morning, but let's have a new story.
Yeah. Speaking of that, recently you said this to me and I actually posted it one day about like nobody likes to get punched in the face. And that like, you know, we all have moments in our whatever part of our lives and what, you know, this is obviously very much like in a professional lens, yeah. But you get punched in the face. And one of the things you were reminding me of is that like it stings, but it's not going to last forever. And I think that's another thing that sometimes when we're in moments of, call it suffering, yeah. strife, we don't want to be where we are, whether it's in a job, out of a job, whatever the situation, and it can feel like it's forever.
Yeah.
And so that, so can you share a little bit about that perspective of the...
Well, that's a real thing. You know, I mean, you know, that's, you know, not, I mean, the metaphor, like when I'm with a client and, you know, they're experiencing that, it's, you know, I have tremendous empathy because I know they feel like they're in the barrel, you know, like they're in a barrel and the barrel's rolling over Niagara Falls and, you know, they can't get out of the barrel. They can't look over the top. And it's just, you know, the trick is to let them know or help them that figure out a way that they can just see over the top of the barrel. So they don't have to jump out of the barrel, but give them an opportunity to see a little bit past of what they're experiencing right then, which can be very traumatic or very, you know, very unhappy or unsettling or, you know, another language we always use, like feeling very unmoored to your own experience and sort of either adrift or just really lost. And then figure out how to give them some sort of North Star to sort of guide them back. They're not going to feel better right then, but again, create, you know, optionality, create a runway towards something that feels different than that terrible place that they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true because I think like when you can just see a little bit of a light, you don't have to see the full beacon. I think, Again, it can be the thing that we allow ourselves to like breathe a bit, see a bit of hope in that. And you, it's like, once we actually can see like, this is temporary. Now that temporary for some people can be 2 hours or 2 years. So there's a bit of managing our own expectations in that, but I think it's really powerful to, I think here's the thing. I actually think from a, to your point about like metaphorical sense, but also physical, like you've actually shared with me before. I mean, can't tell you how many times we'd have the conversation about like, wait a second, stand up, move in a different direction, look outside the windows at the mountains that you're in now. And I think, again, these are all things about like shifting perception, perspective.
Yeah, change your geography. You know, change your geography, even if it's like getting up or standing up, whatever, you know, change your geography. It'll change your perspective. You know, look out the window, you know, or we like to say, you know, swivel in the chair, you know, 12 degrees, look at the room differently. You could do that. And just to add something, and we've talked about this, you know, in terms of looking over the barrel, it's, you know, and this is a line I ripped off from a very famous guy named Jack Canfield before he was famous. But, you know, he has this metaphor, this, you can drive from New York to Los Angeles at night and you only have to see 200 yards in front of yourself. And because that's the extent your high beams go. So you can end up in Los Angeles, you just have to manage the next 200 yards. And sometimes, you know, for someone who's in a tough spot, it says, you don't have to figure it all out. You just got to get the next 200 yards. Now, and then the next 200 yards, and then again, story is you end up in Los Angeles. But, you know, I think, you know, that's something I came across maybe 25 years ago, and it always stuck with me. And it's been helpful to me, and it's very uniquely helpful in coaching, both as a, you know, something to share with the client and something, you know, to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's helped me so many times. I have my kind of list and notes that I write down, and that's been one of them, you know, because again, it's that time when you're like, and you know me and my analogies about bike riding, and it's like, if I'm out on the mountain bike and my head is down and I'm looking at the next rock in front of me, it's like, you know, I'm never gonna get, it's only gonna be an obstacle to me again. Yep. It's like, if I could pick my head up and see the, whatever the version of the 200 yards in front of me, then I'm gonna soar forward.
Yeah, yeah.
So hopefully with less crashes. But so I also want to talk about, I purposely had stalked you enough to come on at this time of year. I thought was really important. Your episode is going to be being released in mid-December. And I think that the end of the year and the start of the new year can be a time of excitement, angst, shoulds, shoulda, woulda, couldas.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I really wanted to have you help share some perspective about ways to think about this time of year, and or maybe it's not the time of year, but practices that we can take really just aimed at setting ourselves up for success to continue that journey forward. It's funny, I think I'll hush in a second, but I think like I've never, whenever I hear people making like end of year goals or, you know, goals for the new year, I've always kind of, it's never really resonated with me because I felt like it was not setting myself up for success. So I just wanted to bring it up, thinking that people in the audience may have, again, that angst, excitement, or, you know, big things that they're trying to do around this time of year.
Yeah, you know, it can be very tricky. And all the whole New Year's resolution stuff, you know, we all have enough data in our own lives and science to know that that doesn't really work. So I would just, as you move to the new year, I would just be kind to yourself and set moderate expectations on what you need to do. And just, you know, take it slow. Although the one thing that you and I do, and I do this with a lot of my clients, some of them like it, some of them don't. I learned this from my coach, my great Helen House, my original coach and mentor. We used to do this end of year exercise where she would have you look through your calendar, which is sort of helpful, and like go throughout the year just to sort of refresh your memory of what the past year has been, and you know, list the things that were your, you know, successes, wins. I have it right in here: breakthroughs, celebrations, and accomplishments. And additionally, your failures, your losses, your breakdowns, your disappointments, and where you feel. And this is my favorite one: like where you feel incomplete, like where what feels unfinished to you, or that gnaws on you for whatever the reason. And you know, think about where you were January 1, whatever the prior year, and where you are now, and what you learned about yourself in that context. And I think that can be really helpful because I think people have a tendency to not think, they forget their successes, and they tend to harp on their lack of successes. And I think it's good to look back on the year and where you've really done well and where you can take a victory lap and what you can be proud of and feel good about yourself. And the other stuff, I don't like to focus too much on the negative but I do think that notion of incompleteness, like where you felt like you could have done more or you feel some absence of. And then go through it. Write some stuff down. My coach Helen's she's not as clinical as I am, so she likes to have you like light it on fire and do like a little dance around it. That's not for me, but I do think it's a good exercise, and you don't have to get too caught up in doing it. But I like that notion of going through your calendar and just sort of remembering where you were, or actually even going through your phone and looking at your pictures of the last year, just to sort of make the year more vivid to you and give you a firmer place to do an examination. And then, you know, do something nice for yourself. And then, you know, whether that's having an adult beverage or going for a bike ride or a walk or, you know, listening to a beautiful piece of music, and then, you know, wrap it up and then move forward kindly to yourself in the new year. January's a bitch, you know, for everybody. You know, it's a tough month.
It's so true. And I think, like, that's a really good look at how can we think about like how we are, it got to the moment. And yeah, I think you're so right about, you know, that whole, especially if someone usually is in a leadership position or striving to evolve as a leader, there's a lot of striving to be the best. And so again, I think that can often set ourselves up for, I don't want to say like picking on ourselves or judging ourselves and I'm not this or that. And so I think it's a great, that's a great one. And
No, I was about to say that it's a great point. I mean, like I do this exercise with some very senior leadership people and, you know, they all focus on the bad stuff. They're really unkind to themselves as they, you know, particularly if they run big organizations because, you know, they have so many stakeholders and, you know, the good leaders are trying not to disappoint their stakeholders. And, you know, so be kind to yourself and then move forward, you know, and then that's the most important part. If you talk about January, the new year, it's like, it's all about what's next.
Yeah. And I think there's an element, there's definitely a connection there because when we can be kind to ourselves in the moment, that creates a much different place from which to move forward.
Yeah.
Whether that's open-mindedness, just a bit of, not to sound cheesy, but a bit of coming from a place of kindness, coming from a place of empathy for yourself and others, I think just definitely helps that movement forward.
And not, I mean, Ted Lasso's is like, is ruining the coaching business because you've got so many good ideas in there. But, you know, the thing about the coming from a place of kindness, it allows you to be more curious about the world and about your job and about your life and about your loved ones. Whereas it just, it opens you up to curiosity. And that is the key to sort of being more successful in your professional life and in your personal life.
Right. Right.
Because you're not bound by you're not bound by the this, whatever perception or whatever narrative or whatever story you're telling yourself.
Yeah. Right. And I think like that, the to go back to something you were talking about earlier is like that reality of being stuck, which is obviously the opposite. Well, almost the opposite of moving forward. And one thing I want to kind of drill into is something that we also talk about a lot is the reality of time and the call it gift of time. And so I guess I'll just turn it over to you. Like, can like talk about that element?
Well, it's something, you know, I think about a lot, and as I get a little older and I ultimately have less of it for sure, I think about it even more, but time is the big resource that we have, and it's the most important and it's the most valuable one, and it's the one thing we cannot make more of or get more of. And, you know, one of the things I always say to you is, you know, you could always make more money, but you can't make more time. So be more careful about your time than you are with your money. But the thing about, you know, someone like your audience, they're all high achievers. They're all over deliverers, as I like to call you. And what happens is that your time can get sucked away from you in a lot of different ways. And you have to be very diligent about that, about, you know, whether it's your email, wasting your time on email or wasting your time in meetings that you don't have to be in, or, you know, being pulled in directions or doing work that you shouldn't be doing. And, you know, one of my favorite, I'll throw this back at you as it relates to time. Something I always say to you is like, do more what serves you and less that doesn't. So how does that relate to Shauna in terms of a time or time management?
Yeah. Once again, that's what I say all the time to myself and to other people.
Yeah, and it's true. It's like you just don't want to be wasting time. And and if you pay attention, you can save it. You know, you can harness that a lot to you because it's essentially valuable. And, you know, I don't know. It's the most important thing you could do. And that And in the work situation, I pound this thing to people from, like, just because you could do it better than somebody else doesn't mean you need to be doing it. It's like, let the person do it. Like, you don't have to do it. You should be doing something else, whether, you know, thinking about the strategy of your firm or thinking about your life or whatever. It's just, don't be wasting your time and don't let other people waste your time. And again, you have very senior people listening to this podcast. It's like, don't let other people take your time away from you. Like, and you know when you get on a call, if it's going to be a waste of time, it's going to be a waste of time. Don't get on the call. Guess what? You just got 20 minutes of your life back to think about something more important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to just pause for a second and reiterate to people the connection between that element of time and being that time is precious and using that time with intention. And again, that is a direct connection to what Leslie shared about do more of what serves you and less of what doesn't. And so again, kind of like if you hear the part about the time and you're like, well, how the hell do I do that? Again, it's like a great question to ask yourself. Does this actually serve me in the moment? Or does this actually serve me in the bigger picture or not? You know, so.
And you know, as I like to say to you or anybody else, if you have to ask yourself that question 20 times a day, fabulous. That's fantastic because you're managing your life a little bit better. And hopefully you don't have to ask yourself that question 20 times a day. But if you start and you answer it, 2 weeks later, you're only asking yourself 10 times a day because you've handled, you know, the first 10 loss of time and energy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's as you were just talking, I had this moment of just intense gratitude because, folks, as you're hearing all of this, everything we've talked about today has so much to do with making a positive impact on your evolution. And we've talked about everything from when you start coaching, it might not feel so comfortable, or when you start asking yourself those questions, you might ask yourself 20 times, but again, it's the repetition, it's the commitment, it's that journey forward and that pursuit that there's a patience and persistence that goes along with it. And there's times when you really will feel like, you know, I want to bail. I don't want to work. It's not easy to do the work.
Yeah. And you know, there's someone said something to me recently where I read it and it was in a different sphere, but like, you know, consistency is more important than intensity. And if you just sort of stay with something or stay with whatever practice, whether it's your meditation practice or looking for a job practice or whatever it is that you're doing, it's like the commitment to keep on doing and staying the course. Again, you end up in Los Angeles at night. You know, it's like, that's what it's about. It's not about like, I'm just going to crush this today or I'm going to kill, you know, it's that, it's not about that. And as a bike rider, you know that. It's not about, you're not getting on the bike your first day and doing 100 miles, right? It's a lot of little steps to get you there.
Yeah. And I will say that's a great analogy to bring up because it's like, if you take a break from the bike for a week, it can make it so much harder to get back on. You get back on, you're like, oh, geez, like it's so hard and it's so painful. So again, I think sometimes that can be a great impetus to keep going a little bit a day, a drop, one breath
in meditation
practice, work your way up. Or sometimes you're only going to, like your continual practice may be 5 miles or 5 breaths or, and that's okay. It's whatever serves your journey forward.
Just turn up every day. Just turn up every day in your life and, you know, pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, folks, now you can see and hear why I absolutely adore Leslie Harris and the incredible impact that he has had on my life. I don't even have words for the gratitude. And now you can see for yourselves why I turn to him in my own journey and why I share with you so openly about things we discuss. So Leslie, I just thank you so much for making time. Thank you for allowing me to convince you to come on.
You're a big part of how I am today in the world or how I traffic in the world today. You're a big part of it. Don't forget it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, folks, have an amazing day. Save this episode, replay it. I guarantee it will make an impact in your journey. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.